Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked on to our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington so very special. Our Town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. My guest today is Kevin Mason, a talented local musician. Many of you have heard him playing at concerts on the dock, or even one of his vintage cocktail hour Frank Sinatra-type shows. But before we get to that, let's find out where he came from. So welcome to the show, Kevin. Let's start at the beginning. Are you a local boy, born and bred here in Jefferson County?
No, Marianne, no. I came from a place called Alki Beach in West Seattle, born and raised there.
So what did your folks do?
My dad was involved in the electrical wholesale business, and he would like provide all the electrical parts for some of the skyscrapers in downtown Seattle. He once told me that the tallest building in town didn't have any heaters because it was all heated by the lighting system.
Interesting. Yeah. And what about your mom?
My mom was actually a professional photographer. She started as working for her uncle's studio in Vancouver, BC, and at 14 years old, doing hand coloring of black and white, because all the photographs of that era were black and white.
So were you an only child, or do you have brothers and sisters?
No, I've got one sister and a half-sister and a stepsister.
Okay. And I always like to ask about people's teenage years. What were you like as a teenager?
I was interested in building things in my backyard and in my basement shop that my dad had. He gave me some fundamental tools as a boy, and I got one little section of his workbench for my place for my tools, and I built a variety of different things. Like, I built a fort in a big madrona tree across the alley, and actually had a pulley system where I could get on a rope and go into my backyard from the big tree. And I built quite a fort in the big madrona tree in back.
So when did you first get interested in music?
I would say in junior high is when I first found out that I really liked music. And, well, actually before then, as a young boy, I can remember sitting in front of the old Grundig hi-fi that my father had, which was a very high-fidelity, good-quality radio. And I would sing along with the popular songs of the era. And I can recall one of the babysitters telling me, "My, you have a good voice, Kevin," when I was just a boy. And my father was a good singer, too.
So did you start playing with a group or anything?
I did. I did in high school. I started with a little combo, and that's what we called it. And we would play the little dances in the gym and at the Y and stuff like that. And it built up from there. And I started getting better. You know, the bands got better and over time. And I certainly enjoyed doing it. And I had a special, act that I did where I was really involved in the dancing part of the music.
So were you going to go into it professionally?
Well, I just was having fun as a kid at that point. You know, in high school, I was eventually asked to be the singer for a rock and roll group that had been recording and had a bit of a name for themselves called the Imperials. And they were being looked after by the famous DJ of the era, Pat O'Day, at KJR Radio. And so they got me into the studio right away as soon as they hired me, and we started doing recordings. And from that, We did quite well.
Okay.
He booked us exclusively all over.
So did you complete high school?
Well, I was actually in high school, but I was working with the band so often that in my senior year, I thought, gee, this is so much fun. I'm just going to do the music. And I left school, which was a pretty bonehead move, I got to say. And of course, I finally realized that about a month after I had quit school and decided I would go back the next year. And I was able to go back and get my studies and get a diploma.
And so when you got the diploma, did you go for a straight job or did you stay in music?
Well, I stayed in music for a while longer after I, because we were getting booked all over the place, but then one of the guys in the band had some trouble with drugs, and so the band broke up, and so I ended up looking for a regular job because now I'm out of school and I wanted to have my own place.
Right, you needed money for that.
Yeah, so I ended up going to an employment agency, and because if you paid them, they would get you a better job.
Right.
So I had a couple of different jobs through the employment agencies that turned out to be very good jobs for a young fellow.
And one of them, you told me, was at beauty shops.
I first got a job working at a place called Schick Electric, fixing electric razors. And I was such a smooth-faced kid that I didn't even shave yet, but yet I was fixing electric razors. But because of my abilities with fixing things, I went to this employment agency again and told them that I would like to move up in the world. And they says, well, okay, we're going to get you out to this company called Paris American. And Paris American, this is in the 60s now, the late 60s. And at that time, almost every woman that could afford it would go to the beauty shop once a week or once a month or whenever she could. So the business was booming. And my job with them was to go around to different beauty shops throughout the day in a suit and tie, and I would repair whatever it was that was broken. If their hydraulic chair didn't work, I would replace it, or I would replace the thermostat or the timer.
Okay. I know you had fun at repairing things in beauty shops, but the bug to perform was still with you, so you applied for the musical Hair. Tell me about that.
Oh, well, I sure did, and it was a wonderful opportunity. It was hard to get in because over 800 people tried out for the show.
But you succeeded, but I seem to remember the big hype about the show was that the actors were nude. Is that true?
It is true. There was a nude scene. However, it was a three-hour show that was high energy from the very beginning to the very end. And at the end of the first act, there was a 30-second scene where we all were nude and came up out of underneath a sheet that had a field of daisies projected on it as new people full of love and peace.
So how long did you stay with the acting?
I would say probably about a year and a half.
And then what?
I had been designing while I was on the road. The show became the first national tour of Hair. And while I was on the road in my spare time, because like I say, a three-hour show each day, you got the rest of the day, I started doing design work of building design. And so I was very interested in that. And at one point I decided, you know, I'm gonna just become a regular guy again, because Hair was very controversial and it was kind of a lot of reasons for me to just go back to Seattle and be a regular guy at my choice.
Okay, so what'd you build?
Well, I decided that I would come back and work for my brother-in-law's construction company as a laborer to start at the bottom. And boy, did I curse myself, because I had literally left Miami Beach riding in a chauffeur-driven Rolls Royce with Miss Miami Beach to come back to underneath a house, digging it out as a laborer.
But you didn't do that for very long.
No, I didn't. No. But boy, shouldn't. I thought, what a bonehead move that was.
Yes, yes.
But at any rate, I started creating things on my own, of building things, even from the scraps that were left from the end of the day, of the construction that was going on around me. And I found that I had a real aptitude for coming up with good design, and also the good mind to be able to how to put it together. So I cobbled together some tools. My first table saw was literally a skill saw turned upside down in a table.
But you ended up building some fairly famous places for the era. What were some of them?
I ended up with a niche of doing nightclubs. And I started by chance, a banker that I knew got me to take over a job with a place called Scucci's, which was very famous back in the day. And then I did a nightclub called Oz. And then I did a place called Celebrity Bar and Grill. And I worked on a place called The Encore. And I created a whole new place called Festa out in Linwood. And these were very high-end nightclub dance clubs there was always a velvet rope involved where people would wait all night to get in, and sometimes they couldn't even get in. But but they were very popular, and I felt really good to be able to create these places.
Well, these were mainly Seattle places, but you also branched out. Tell me about the Alaska venture.
Because my work as a designer-builder was quite solitary, because it was complicated oftentimes, so I would end up working just by myself on the more complicated pieces. But I wanted to, interact with people, so I ended up in Juneau, Alaska. And I found this job just by happenstance. I went into a building that was being constructed, and I ended up offering my services as a finish carpenter, totally ready to go to work, and ended up creating a Gold Rush era museum type walkway, a street like a Gold Rush era street in this 240-foot long building that it turned out very nice, and was all done in a historic manner from the Historical Archive Museum. I made the building facades. I did the State Capitol steps. I did the Barron's Bank. I did a millinery. I even did the Juneau Opera House. And I did a Russian Orthodox church with a gold onion dome.
Okay, but at some point you decided to walk away from the building trade and do something else. What triggered that?
Well, I'd eaten so much sawdust over these years. I'd really, it's been a lot of years eating sawdust. And I decided when the year 2000 Y2K didn't materialize in much, I realized I knew nothing about computers. So I literally went back to school to learn computers, and I learned how to become a web designer and how to manipulate images with Photoshop. So I spent over a year and a half in just studying computer web design and computer graphics.
Okay, so really your focus was on computers, but in the subsense of design. You were still using your design skills, just sort of in a different way.
Well, design is design, and this was going to be design on the internet instead of design in the physical realm. So I used images to create this sense of design.
So we're now after the year 2000. At some point, you decided to move to Port Townsend. How did that happen?
Well, while I was living in Alaska, I really enjoyed the small town feel of getting to know the people. You got to know real people, and it was very nice. It reminded me of West Seattle, where I'd grown up, before it got very big. I decided that I would try to find a small town to come to while I still had the juice to make it my own, make a place my own. So I looked for a whole year, and I finally ended up in Port Townsend one day on part of my search. And as I drove through town, by the time I reached the very end down by Commander's Beach House, a friend of mine walked out. She was in charge of the marina there. And she said, Kevin, Port Townsend is tailor-made for you. It's full of musicians and artisans and wonderful people and very creative and alive. So on the way out of town, I asked a realtor if they could find me the worst house in the best neighborhood. And I felt like within a month, I had made an offer on just that, the worst house in the best neighborhood by the fire station.
Okay. That's a somewhat unusual story because most people know someone or, you know, they have a connection before they came here, but you researched it and you came and you saw it and you decided that, yes, this is for me. And so what did you do when you first came to Port Townsend? You bought this rundown property and then what?
I started working on it, trying to bring it back to life. And so that was kind of my first focus. I'd made enough money from the work in Alaska to where I could spend my focus on, you know, fixing up my little house. And so I did, and I worked on that. And then because of my experience with the web design, I was able to get the city's web design for a while. And I created a wonderful website that was very image-focused of the Victorian vibe, and to create a website where you could roll over one of the old bed and breakfasts in black and white, and it would turn into color, and then you could click it, and it would go to their website. So it turned out very nice, but then there was a change of marketing managers in town, and so they changed it to somebody else.
Okay. So basically, you more or less switched careers yet again in that you were on web design, and that worked for a while, but you got back into music. So what was the transition there?
Well, a friend of mine owned a nightclub called The Upstage. We ended up talking one night late when all the power was out in town, and he realized that I had quite a history with music, and he says, well, you should get up and sing sometime. Well, I'd been here about 8 years, and I hadn't let anybody know that I had that history. But on one night, he says, well, get up and do a song. And I says, well, I don't have a band. He says, well, Pete Toyne over there, he's a very good guitar player. Go ask him. He'll back you on a song. I did, and kind of the rest is history because I started doing music regularly after that. And he had been encouraging me to get up and sing because nobody knew that I could sing in town. And so finally one night after visiting him over a year there at the Upstage, I decided that I would go ahead and do a song because he was saying, well, go over and talk to Pete Toyne. He'll back you up on a song. So I did. And so I sang a song with Pete Toyne for an open mic, and it went over very well. So at the end of that, Mark said, well, you know, you're a good singer. I'm going to hook you up with a band. So he ended up creating a band for me, and I did a Sinatra show, and it sold out. And then I said, well, how about a blues show? So I did a blues show, and it sold out. And then I did a Christmas show, and it sold out. So it appeared as though maybe my singing would play here. And then I got an offer to sing at one of the Concerts on the Dock shows for one song. And that turned out quite well. And then I decided, well, sure, the band asked me if I would become their singer. So I did that for a season, and then I started my own band, and now this has been about my seventh year of doing the Concerts on the Dock series, and so I'm...
Okay, so right now you do two different kinds of music, right?
I do.
Okay, let's talk first about the Concert on the Dock, that sort of music, pop dance music, is that what it is?
It's really... Yeah, it's focused on dance music. It's focused on let's have a good time, get up and dance. These are great old familiar tunes that are going to make you want to move. And that's the Concerts on the Dock. And I also have a big show coming up on July 4th this year at Vintage that's going to be with the band. And then, of course, on August 29th, the Concerts on the Dock will be with the band.
Okay, now wait, what's your band called?
Well, it's called Kevin Mason and the PT All-Stars.
Okay, well, that's clear enough, I think.
Yeah.
Snippet of a little bit of your music.
You take my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You choke my will, oh, what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. I laughed at love because I thought it was funny. You came along.
Now, sometimes you play a whole different genre. In fact, I happened to be somewhere on Valentine's Day last year where you were doing a quite different show. Tell us about that.
Well, on Valentine's Day, I've been doing a show. I call it Vintage Cocktail Hour, and it's the old singers like Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett and Nat King Cole and even Johnny Mathis, but the great old singers. And it's something I've always loved, doing that type of music. But it's really singing, not so much concentrating on hard rock dance at all. There's none of that. But it's kind of a smooth groove crooning, I guess you'd call it. But it comes out quite well. And I also do the Vintage Downtown. For the last 3 years, I've done their New Year's Eve show. And I do the Valentine's Day show, and I do other shows in regards to that style of Vintage Cocktail Hour music.
Okay.
Oh, how lucky can one guy be? I kissed her and she kissed me. Like a fellow once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room went completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like a sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in the boat?
Trouble switching back and forth, or do you just...
No, I love them both. I love them both. I love music and, well, those types of music in particular I love. I love to get excited and for the dance music. And I love to sing a good Sinatra song.
Okay.
Just last week, I sang with a 14-piece orchestra doing Sinatra songs.
And isn't there a band you're going to be with this summer in Squim?
Well, I can't really say for sure that I'm hired on, but the Squim, called Stardust Big Band, is who I just sang with a week ago.
Ah, okay. Yeah, and that sounds like it's more your vintage stuff versus
it's
rock.
All
yeah,
vintage
okay.
stuff. Yeah,
I get it from the title.
Band,
yeah,
the Stardust Big Band.
Well, you know, in addition to your music, a lot of people in Port Townsend know about you because of what the leader called the Raccoon House. So tell us about the Raccoon House. What is that?
The Raccoon Lodge is a nickname that I gave it because the big tree was a gigantic Monterey cypress tree that was giant. It was 30 plus feet in circumference, and it broke off and it left a big stump. And I looked at that big stump every day, and I thought of the poor raccoons that lost their home, and I thought, you know, I can do better. I'm a skilled carpenter, and why don't I build a whimsical facade just to remind myself that it's not just a dead stump.
Now, it's on Clay Street, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just in case some of you listeners haven't driven by yet, but tell us about it, your vision. What is it like?
Well, because I did the old Gold Rush era street in Juneau, I had a lot of experience in researching and studying the old ways of building and the decor of the 1800s. And Port Townsend has got that vibe, of course. You know, it's a Victorian seaport.
Right.
So I thought, well, I'm tailor-made to create something that brings at least my thoughts towards, you know, some of the old styles of building that I incorporated into the Raccoon Lodge. And so I handmade most all of it just from common materials and created something that I guess you just have to see it to understand.
Can you describe a couple of the elements?
Well, it's basically, it's got a doorway mystical doorway to the tree and a window that I hoped someday where the birds would come and go and the squirrels would come and go and maybe even a raccoon would stick his head out.
Well, this tree must be hundreds of years old to be as big.
Yeah, 150 years old, I would suspect.
And there was a threat of it being chopped down or something. What happened? And is it safe now?
Oh, it was safe from the very beginning because I am a very skilled carpenter and I have a lot of experience.
No, I didn't mean safe for the tree. I meant safe from being chopped down by some city official.
We've got some new people in the city and they didn't realize or forgot the fact that it says, as you enter town, a Victorian Seaport arts community. And so the minute this building inspector saw it, she wrote an order to tear it down within 30 days. Well, that didn't bode well with the people in Port Townsend that like the idea of more of an artistic community, which, as it claims, one of the main reasons I moved here was because of that sign that said, welcome to this arts community. So there was a petition made, and out of a town of 10,000, the petition got 2,800 signatures and about 80 letters to the city saying, why? Why are you making this man tear down this artistic raccoon lodge?
So now it's been deemed an artistic venture? What's the term?
Well, they've tried to find a way out of acting like bullies, and they found a way that they could get the Arts Commission to certify it as part of what the Arts Commission would claim, and so now it is under the umbrella of the Arts Commission for another year and a half before they say it either has to be torn down again or reapplied again.
Okay, well, let's just hope that everyone steps up again to save it, because I personally quite like it. I think it's really wonderful, and I hate to tell you this, but we're just about out of time here. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show today, Kevin. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Maryam McNellis. My guest today has been local musician and artist Kevin Mason, savior of the Raccoon Lodge. In addition to thanking Kevin, I also want to thank Sunny Flores, editor and producer of Our Town. Many of you don't realize how important an editor is to a show like this. He'll distill what we're saying, make us sound so much better than we might be, taking out mumbles, errors, ahs, even you knows, making us sound much more eloquent and smooth. Thank you so much for listening to Our Town on KPTZ. This is Maryam McNellis signing off for today, but please keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Maryam McNellis and edited by Sunny Flores.